When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'm Sam Keir, host of Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. For the past 12 months, I've been talking to T20 star David Visa, getting his take from behind the scenes at the IPL, the 100 and the rest of the world's biggest leagues.
That's the Donnelly view system, Diolis. There's no ways in my mind that was up.
These guys don't know how to win at this stage.
He had his driver pick him up in his Bentley.
People start chanting your name. You kind of have to pinch yourself.
Hitman for Hire, a year in the life of a franchise cricketer. Listen now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Sport Social.
Thanks for choosing this free Anfield Index podcast. If you'd prefer to listen to this or any of our other shows without adverts, then now's the time to check out Anfield Index Pro. With AI Pro, you can supercharge your entire listening experience. You'll not only get all of our podcasts without the ads, but you'll have them far faster with our quick publish feature available exclusively for subscribers. AI Pro also puts you in the heart of our sound studio, with an option to listen to many of our shows live and interact with the podcasters in real time as the shows are recording. Upgrading couldn't be easier. AI Pro is available on all popular podcast platforms, and we have our own apps for Apple and Android. Just head on over to AnfieldIndexPro.com and get started today.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to Rivalry Con here on Anfield Index Pro. I'm Harry Sethi. The Reds got their pursuit of the Premier League title back on track on Sunday afternoon, courtesy of a 3-1 win away to Fulham, with Diogo Jota, Ryan Gravenberch and the returning Trent Alexander-Arnold all getting onto the score sheet as Klopp shuffled his pack considerably. With two more away games looming on the horizon, Klopp's side will be hoping that Sunday's win is a sign of things to come as they head to Goodison Park for the Merseyside derby, perhaps for the last time, as work on Everton's new stadium takes place, to take on Sean Dyche's troubled side. With points deductions and concerns around prospective new owners circulating, Goodison is set to be a feral place on Wednesday evening. And joining me on the pod this week to discuss Everton's season, the off-the-pitch turbulence and the lack of consistency on it, I'm happy to welcome back writer and lifelong Evertonian, Elliot Cuff. Welcome back, Elliot. Good to speak with you.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah, it's always good. Always good to chat ahead of these Merseyside derbies whenever we have spoken over the years. And we were just chatting before we hit the record button around, I'm sure plenty listening to this from a tribal perspective, from the Liverpool side of things, will want me to enjoy the misery, enjoy the frustration, enjoy sort of the infuriation. But we're talking about how infuriating it has been for a number of seasons now for the club. And this season, with the added implication, of course, of the points deductions and the appeals and the various sort of protests going on with that, feels like there's another layer to frustrate fans about. And it's hard to know where to begin, to be honest. But I'm going to try and ask you to, if you can, cast your mind back right to the start of the season and imagine, well, you don't imagine, but just give us a bit more detail as to sort of what you thought Everton could achieve this season, what your ambitions were, or what you thought the club's ambitions should have been, rather. And then I guess, like, bring us up to present day on the reality of how the season's unfolded.
It is tough, really, to rack your brain and look at where we were however many months ago the start of the season was, because so much has happened over the last few months. I think after, you know, yet another near relegation last season, the hope was that Everton would grow and that we'd see some kind of progression on the pitch, off the pitch. It's clear, it's been clear for a while that Farhad Moshiri doesn't want to own the club anymore. So takeover talks have been looming overhead all season long. I think the hope for many is that we'd see Sean Dyche help the players on the pitch develop. We might make a few signings that increase the quality in the squad. And basically, we head towards a brighter future. Now, obviously, as we can all see, that has very much not been the case. We've had turbulent issues on the pitch and off the pitch. I think the last couple of years, obviously coming so close to going down 2 years in a row, look like cakewalks now, given the point deductions and the controversy and the fans' outrage with the Premier League and the way they've handled it, and the fact that the players are underperforming and that Sean Dyche is facing his fair share of criticism for not being able to develop the players, not having the right tactical approach, not handling substitutions right. The fact that Farhad Moshiri is now basically a distant owner who doesn't have anything to do with the club. The fact that our prospective new owners, if they are to be given the go ahead, are they look kind of shady, and that a lot of people aren't too keen to see them take over in the first place. So, yeah, it's a strange situation where I think everyone was probably not optimistic that we were going to improve this season, because the track record hasn't been great, but hopeful nonetheless that we'd see some kind of improvement or we'd start moving in the right direction. And if anything, we've gone the other way around.
Yeah, it feels like that's probably the easiest way for us to discuss this, isn't it? To sort of break it into a few different chunks. And so I want to ask you to talk about the off the pitch issues in one sort of bunch, I suppose. And there's a few of them, as you mentioned, the existing owner and how distant he's become, as you mentioned, the prospective new owners and concerns around those as responsible owners. And then the third off the pitch aspect, I imagine, is of course the points, penalties and deductions that have been made by the Premier League and the various processes going on around appealing those decisions and the impact that could eventually have, of course. And of course, that does impact on the pitch matters. But yeah, just talk us through that, because it feels like there's really a lot to contend with there.
Yeah, there is. And I think whenever your team are performing poorly or you're going through a rough spell on the pitch, you can excuse that if everything else is above board and looking like it's looking like the club has basically run well. And I think especially in the summer when we were able to finally remove a lot of the board that the fans were protesting so heavily against throughout most of the season. Graham Sharp left, Denise Barrett-Baxendale left, obviously Bill Kenwright remained before his sad death. But that was a really big sticking point for a lot of people last year. We don't want the board here. They're running the club poorly. We want them gone. And for one reason or another, they all ended up leaving. So you're thinking, great, we're making improvements. But after that, it seems like Moshiri has made little to no effort to engage with the fans, to reassure fans. I mean, I think I can't even remember when it was. A few months ago, he did throw up a statement indicating that he had no intention to sell the club. We now know that's definitely not the case. So we've heard nothing from him since then. I think 777, who are the prospective new owners, we know very little about them other than they have plenty of controversy surrounding the clubs they own elsewhere. They owe money. They haven't, I can't remember who they own, but one of the Belgian clubs they own, they didn't pay their wages on time. It's all these issues that look really scary, given that Everton are in a position now where we are basically being run by someone who has no interest in the club. And the people that are coming in, they might have interest, but they don't seem to be doing a good job with the clubs already in their portfolio. So that's pretty daunting. And I think ultimately, we just want to see stability and cohesion. If you're looking to try and sign players, whether they're young players that have got potential like Amadou Onana or some established Premier League players that can come in and improve the squad, I think you have to look at the other clubs around us and are Everton an attractive prospect? And the answer has to be no, because other than the fact that Everton as a club have a storied history and they're one of the sleeping giants of English football, there is no present reason to suggest that anyone would want to come and play for Everton. We don't have the money to pay big wages. We don't have the caliber in the squad to suggest that we'll stay up. And off the pitch, it's just been a disaster. And you don't ever feel, I can imagine, if you're a player thinking about signing for Everton, I can't imagine you'd ever feel safe and secure knowing that your interests are being handled well and that your future is secure as an Everton player. And obviously that leads us on to the point deductions, which have been really difficult to deal with this season, because all season long we're bouncing up and down. We don't know where we are in the league. We don't know what the future holds. And I think the most frustrating thing, aside from the fact that the punishments have been egregiously harsh and that the 10-point deduction initially was ridiculous, and that Richard Masters has handled the situation in a way that can be best described as haphazard, I think the main issue is that the club have led us into this situation, that we can criticise the Premier League as much as we want, We can complain that the punishments have been too harsh, but ultimately it's our own doing that has led us into a nightmare. And you look back near 10 years ago when Farhad Moshiri took over, everything looked positive and we're really optimistic about how the club would be in the future. And all that's happened is our squad has got weaker, our fan base has got more tired, and as a club, as a brand, we are a lesser product because of the way we've been mishandled, mismanaged. And it's really easy to understand why a lot of Evertonians are really tired. And even like the loss against Chelsea last week when we lost 6-0, even that, you don't necessarily feel sad or angry. You just feel like disappointed. Like you just, there's nothing left there that Everton can take from you, which sounds very over the top, but it's the way the club makes you feel, because there's very little of positive note to suggest that things are going to get better anytime soon.
Hello there. Have you ever found yourself getting ready to watch the Liverpool match? You've got your mates round, you've got your drinks, you've got your snacks, you're all set to go. It's going to be a good day. And then you find out, oh, the game's not actually being broadcast in your region. There's the heartbreak, there's rage, there's despair, there's fury, you're upset, you're looking for a solution. Well, we've teamed up with NordVPN to bring you a game-changing solution. That's right, with NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a country where the game's on live. It's like having a global ticket to sports, TV shows, and movies from all around the world. And here's the best part. If you go to nordvpn.com/Anfield Index, you'll score the best discount on your NordVPN plan. Plus, our link gives you 4 extra months free on the 2-year plan. And that's what we call a winning streak. And if you're sitting there and you're thinking, what if it's not for me? What if I don't like it? What if I'm not getting the use of it? Don't worry about it. There's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so it's totally risk-free. I've been using NordVPN to catch all the Liverpool matches and TV shows that I'd normally miss out on. It's totally transformed both my weekends and my TV watching. And not only that, not only does it give me access to stuff from all around the world with the click of a button, it keeps all my data safe. It means that the miscreants, the ne'er-do-wells, what my grandmother would have called scallywags, who lurk on the internet to try and steal your information, can't get your information. NordVPN keeps it safe for you. So don't let geo-restrictions bench you this season. Visit nordvpn.com/Anfield Index and make sure that you're in the game, no matter when or where it's being played. Remember, it's not just sports. It's your all-access pass to binge-worthy TV shows and blockbuster movies from all around the globe. NordVPN literally unlocks the world for you and keeps you safe from the world. So don't miss out. Head over to nordvpn.com/Anfield Index and let the fun and games begin.
I was going to ask you about the points deduction in terms of, it does sound like from what you're saying there. I mean, do you get the impression, it's been my impression a little bit, in terms of the fan base accepts that, of course, that there was mismanagement and, of course, there was going to be some consequences for that. The fact that there doesn't seem to be any sort of precedence or framework with which to sort of contextualize a 10-point deduction, let alone any points deduction, is obviously a massive issue. It also feels to me as though one of the things that's not helped matters here is, you know, when you're seeing these cases of mismanagement that might really, you know, might lead to some sort of deduction or some sort of consequence or punishment, for example, for these actions, they're not, of course, meted out equally across the league, of course, when we're thinking about clubs that have clearly and are currently under investigation for their own sort of cases of mismanagement and much more vast mismanagement, of course, with the Manchester City case, cases, 115 charges that are still outstanding against them. Do you think that the fan base accepts, of course, that, you know, that there's been mismanagement, but the frustration has come from the other stuff I'm talking about there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think no one can deny the fact that Everton have made mistakes and their spending has been out of control. I do think there are mitigating factors, which I know the club lodged in their initial appeal that weren't initially taken into consideration when the 10 points was taken away, such as the Ukrainian war with Russia has meant that we've lost a lot of sponsorship through Alisher Usmanov. And of course, Gylfi Sigurdsson's legal issues meant that he left the club sort of quietly when his contract expired, and that's a big chunk of investment that we weren't able to get anything back on, and that was a situation completely taken out of Everton's control. And of course, the stadium commitments have meant that spending has gone up, whereas you compare us to Nottingham Forest, who their breach was for spending more money over the limit than Everton, and their money that they spent was primarily on players, and ours was on stadium manufacturing. So you look at that and think, well, we haven't necessarily benefited from our spending. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to move towards the future. We're trying to look at developing an area in Liverpool and all this kind of stuff. And Forest have basically splashed the cash on and buying a whole new squad, and they got a lesser punishment than we did. So it's difficult when you start comparing. I think the Man City thing and Chelsea as well, who obviously have their own problems, it's frustrating. And I think it's not necessarily healthy to play a game of, well, what about them? But it is frustrating when it feels like Everton are being made an example of, how we have not one but two points deductions in the same season, and that there's even talk about a potential third one coming down the pipeline. And also, as you say, there's no established framework of, here, you break this rule, here is the corresponding punishment. It very much seems like the Premier League are making it up on the fly, and that is one of the many reasons that people are advocating for an independent regulator to come in and solve those issues. Yeah, it's really frustrating. But as you said, it's definitely the case where fans are very clear about the fact that Everton aren't innocent and that Everton have made mistakes, and that it's really frustrating that it's our own doing that's caused this. But it does seem like the Premier League are particularly gunning for Everton, and they're making them, and they're trying to make an example of them, and that's not fair, and it's not the way it should be done. And I think, especially if you look back at the six clubs that tried breaking off and forming the Super League, and they were all given a financial punishment, because as the Premier League said, you can't punish the fans. Well, why are Everton fans being punished now for financial issues? Which you could argue is a far lesser crime than what the six clubs tried to do. So, yeah, it's difficult. And if you start looking at other cases, it becomes more complicated. But I think that's the problem with the Premier League making up as they go along. You have to have established rules. Here is what you did. Here is what happens now. You can't just make it up, because otherwise fans are always going to point here and go, well, what about them? And how do they get away with this? And yeah, it just becomes an even messier situation than it needs to be.
There's always going to be tribalism, I think, in any sort of discussion around football. But I think that, to your point, yeah, just the absence of any consistency, any framework, has just left itself open to all of these accusations against them, as in terms of sort of the unfairness of their ruling, the scale of the punishment, and then of course the comparative lack of action against other clubs. And you can obviously talk about legal delays and all sorts, but it does feel particularly galling that they're not taking action against these other clubs. Or, as you mentioned, you know, those six clubs, including Liverpool, that did have that discussion around breaking away. Nice sort of slap on the wrist, nothing too heavy there, because I don't know, branding or whatever. It does feel as though that's the reason. Amongst that, you did mention something that I'd forgotten to bring up. Of course, that in the long run, hopefully, will be a positive story, which is of course the plans for the new stadium. Where is that at the moment? Is this sort of the latest update, and obviously money being committed to it? What is the latest on those plans?
I can't give you too much detail on the progression of the stadium, because I haven't followed it that keenly. But what I do know is that the stadium is said to be ready next season. And there was a debate at one point in time, do we move into the stadium as soon as we're able to, which looks like it should be towards the end of 2024, or do we wait until the conclusion of next season so we can start afresh? And I think, the last I heard anyway, the club were leaning on the latter approach. So we should have the remainder of this season and then all of next season at Goodison Park, and then after that will move into the new stadium. And I can understand why that has also caused a little bit of debate between the fans, because on one hand, the sooner the stadium's available, if we move into it, we earn more money through sponsorship, through larger attendances, all this kind of stuff. But on the other hand, Goodison Park has been home for so long that it does seem like it would be only right to give it a proper send-off, which means if you end the season naturally at Goodison Park, you can have a big farewell and then you can start fresh moving into the new stadium. But I think the most frustrating thing about all of it is that a lot of fans don't seem to really care about the stadium anymore. And it's because of all these issues that we have on and off the pitch that really the stadium, which was at one point sort of the jewel in our crown, now is just this inconvenience that we're still excited to move into it and it's still something that the club definitely needs, but it's the shine has been taken off of it because we're dealing with so many other issues and we're uncertain about what division we're going to be playing in and who's going to be owning the club and financially what situation we're in. So yeah, it's a real pain that something that should be so glorious and so exciting has lost a little bit of its glimmer.
Hello, I'm here to annoy you. I'm here to annoy you into listening to more of me and more of others on EPL Index. We don't just have the Anfield Index stuff. We've got EPL Index as well, which covers the entirety of the Premier League. And we have three podcasts and a whole bunch of really good writing on EPLindex.com. The podcasts are my own two-footed podcast, which is every day at 4 p.m., Monday through Friday, covering the whole league. We have A Tad Predictable, hosted by Tadiwa. You know Tadiwa, he does Anfield Index. He presents A Tad Predictable before every Premier League match week. And then Kevin DeVries and his crew on the EPL Roundtable, they're every week after the Premier League match week. So make sure you listen to everything we're doing on EPL Index and follow us there on Twitter at EPL Index. Thank you. Bye-bye.
I was going to say, just sort of based upon the updates I've seen, the videos, the photos, I mean, it does look like it's going to be a really impressive stadium. And I think we've seen with Tottenham's new stadium, just of course the benefits that can bring, and it's just a really impressive ground to go to be honest. And even with Liverpool, with some of the improvements to Anfield, right, it clearly makes a big difference. It should be a focus. It should be something that you can be optimistic towards. But as you said there, not surprised that it has just fallen by the wayside a little bit because of all these other things that have been going on. And I suppose that ends the off the pitch discussion for now. And then switching to on the pitch, as you mentioned, hopes that Dyche could actually, of course, improve the players that he had at his disposal, have a more coherent style of play this season, and players to actually be able to employ that. What have you seen on the pitch in terms of the inconsistency? Has there been an attempt to change things that has obviously faltered? How do you begin to describe sort of Everton's fortunes on the pitch this season, and of course the poor run of form in patches?
It's another situation that's really difficult because of this whole points deduction. Because if you look at what Dyche has done with that Everton team, and you take the points deduction out of the equation, we are currently on 38 points. We are 14th in the table. We're fairly safe. We're a distance from the relegation zone. So on that hand, you have to think, well, Dyche has done a reasonable job. He hasn't got a lot of money. He hasn't got a lot of quality to work with, but we're safe. But when the points deduction comes into the equation, you start to think, has he done enough? And it's difficult how that can shape your perspective of what he's done. Saying that, though, if we were 14th on the table and we were on 38 points, we are still a club that offers very little going forward, that relies too heavily on a good defensive record. And Dyche has not been able to develop enough of the players at his disposal. I can excuse not having the money to buy new players, not having a great deal of quality in the squad in the first place. But as a manager, if you don't have those assets at your disposal, your job is to develop and improve the players you've got, and he hasn't been able to do that. I think Jarrod Branthwaite this season has been a bit of a revelation, but I wouldn't certainly say that was Dyche's hand. He looked promising before that. He had a good season last year at PSV, so he was always likely to come in and perform. But other than that, the regular players that played week in, week out last season and the year before that are no different. They're no better that it tires me that a lot of fans will call into question attitudes and enthusiasm and how much do certain players want to be there. I don't really care. All I care about is what are they doing on the pitch? Are they able to perform? If Amadou Onana has got his sights set elsewhere and he's not fussed about Everton, I don't care as long as he's actually turning up and he's actually getting a performance out of himself every week. And that should be Dyche's responsibility to make sure that happens. And if it's not happening, change the system or change the personnel. For example, Ashley Young is a player who has played frequently this season under Dyche, and at every opportunity, especially the game yesterday, as I'm sure you're aware, has looked like a liability. And it's a real problem that Dyche continues to rely on the same players, keeps turning to the same players when they're proving time and time again they don't have what it takes to help Everton progress on the pitch. And that's one of the frustrating things for me about having a manager that's quite dogmatic and likes sticking to his guns. I don't think Dyche is necessarily the wrong man to lead Everton, but I also don't think he's the right man. And I think if Everton were more stable off the pitch, there's every chance that Dyche would not currently be our manager anymore. That the 6-0 against Chelsea could well have been a death knell for any manager. But he's fortunate, I suppose, in a twisted kind of way that the club are in such disarray, they can't afford to sack him, or at least I don't know who would be doing the sacking at this point. So, yeah, it's a real weird situation. I'm really hoping that with more time and hopefully a bit of investment in the summer, should 777 become our new owners, that Dyche can start to shape the team in the way he wants it to be. But he certainly needs to vary his tactical approach. He's very one note. I think I saw a stat the other day, which was something you'd definitely expect from a Dyche team. I think Everton have had the most long balls up the pitch of any Premier League club this season. So it's the whole Route 1 Burnley style that you'd associate with Dyche. And I think on one hand, Everton fans don't want that. They want attractive football. But on the other hand, Everton fans just want to see their team win, to score goals. And we're not doing either. So I'll take whatever he can get, but he needs to try and get something out of those players. He needs to get Dominic Calvert-Lewin a better scoring. He needs to get more chances that are created through the wide players and the midfielders. He needs to do something to make our attacking play better and more exciting, really, just so that fans can have something to grab onto. Because as I said, if there's so much negativity off the pitch, we need something on the pitch to really keep us going.
You mentioned sort of having a bit more tactical flexibility there, and the fact that he's a bit, you know, at this stage can be a little bit of a, not one trick pony or anything like that, but he's got a very clear approach and he's stuck to it even when it's not been yielding results. Have there been games you could think of this season where you think, okay, positive result and actually positive performance that maybe shows the way forward? Are there games like that where you could actually point to and think, okay, well, that is something that we could have built, not could have built on, but could build on for the future?
I mean, that's the worrying thing, I suppose. There hasn't been an awful lot of opportunities for us to have that that feeling. I think in December, when we, or shortly after we had our first 10-point deduction, we won four games on the spin. And at that point, you think, OK, you know, we're looking pretty solid. That included a win against Chelsea and a win, and a quite comprehensive win against Newcastle. So at that point in time, you're thinking, all right, Dyche just turned the page. We're really going to kick on from here. But then we went on a game of, what was it, 15 games without a win after that. So there's been a lot more lows than high. I think beating Forest on Sunday was a good step, because Forest are a team that are obviously around us in the league table. It's a game that we had to win, and we did so fairly comfortably. The performance was quite robust, and there wasn't an awful lot of creative chances made, but we took what we had, and we defended resolutely, and Pickford had another good performance in goal. So I think, you know, there are certainly positives to be picked out from every game, but I think the biggest issue is that too often this season we've been beaten home or away. And after the game, Dyche spoke to the media and he said, well, you know, there were positives and I think, you know, there's room for improvement and whatnot. And when you're going 15 games without a win, fans don't care if there are improvements on the pitch. They're asking for results. Football is a results business, as we all know. So there are positives, but not enough that someone like Dyche should be able to rest on his laurels. He should be pushing every week. He should be demanding more of his players. And I think after the Chelsea game, for example, he was quite critical of the midfield too. Amadou Onana and James Garner were both dropped before facing Forest on Sunday because he said that the midfield pairing did not do enough to stifle what Chelsea were doing coming forward. They basically were overrun. And I agree with him, and I think he needs to be a little bit more clinical in what he says and how he reacts to certain games, because too many times this season we've just tried to do the same thing again. We've lost, we've tried doing it again, and it hasn't worked. Oh, well, there are positive improvements. Maybe it will work next time, and then it doesn't again. And that's not how we're going to get out of the mess we're in. And, you know, I do feel sorry for him in a way, because he doesn't have a great squad. He doesn't have any money to work with. There's so much uncertainty going on around him. But he does still need to be doing better to get those performances out, to isolate what works and try and find a way to make the most of that and get rid of all the issues and the mistakes and the poor conversion rates that we have, because that's what's really killing us this season.
You mentioned Brantley earlier on as a positive and as somebody who's emerged, obviously whilst not necessarily giving credit to Dyche for that, but speak a little bit about his development this season, and also if there are any other players that you think are or have been cause for comfort in terms of sort of their development, their progression at the club. Again, players you think that, okay, can be built around when it comes to adding to the squad, hopefully next season.
Yeah, Brantthwaite has been a revelation, really. I think when he came back from PSV in the summer, and I think our first game of the season, he started Michael Keane alongside James Tarkowski. I think the overwhelming thought was, why? Why are we going back to the same well we've been to many times before? And I'm really glad that very quickly Dyche was able to see that Brantthwaite is the way to go. He is the one that is showing all the right signs, and he's been such a breath of fresh air all season. He looks composed, he looks confident. He just, from a defensive point of view, Tarkowski is obviously the leader. He's the no-nonsense defender that clears the ball out, but Brantthwaite's the one who's got a bit of culture to him, who can play the ball with his feet, who knows how to read the game. And he very much reminds me of John Stones when he was at Everton, in the sense that they're both very similar in play style. And both, I would suggest, have a much larger future away from Everton. I think it's almost inevitable that he'll leave, whether it's to fund Everton's transfer kitty, or whether it's because he sees his future elsewhere and wants a bigger club. But apart from him, there haven't been an awful lot of players that you can really sing the praises of. I do think Vitaly Mykolenko has improved an awful lot since perhaps we last spoke. He's someone who was very defensively shaky, doesn't offer a lot going forward, but at the back, he was very unpredictable and unreliable. And now he is solid every week. You can't knock him. His work rate is fantastic. His commitment is great. And I think he's really improved. Aside from that, there isn't a lot. I like James Garner. I think when he's at his best, he is a really intelligent and talented footballer. Amadou Onana obviously can dominate possession and dictate play from midfield if he feels like it. But when it comes to our wing play, it has been really weak this season. Obviously, we're struggling for goals up front. And some of that can be put down to confidence issues. Some of it can be put down to just not taking your chances. I think if I was going to pick out a player, it would be Brantthwaite, but I would also give Vitaly Mykolenko and James Garner credit as well, because they've also, and Jordan Pickford always, I've said to you many a time before, I'm his biggest fan, or his biggest supporter. I think he's fantastic. His mistake in the game against Chelsea is frustrating, because then it inevitably leads to more people questioning, oh, is he the man to play for England at the Euros? Yes, he's the best English goalkeeper. I think he's brilliant. So I'd never knock him. But yeah, we need to see more of our senior players stepping up, really. And I think it's a shame we don't have as many emerging talents coming through, because then you might be able to have the likes of, like last season we had Tom Cannon and Ellis Sims on the bench, and people that were at least pushing the senior players. But now we're so bereft of players that it's not great, but hopefully we'll see some improvement, and some of the older, the more senior players will start to take more responsibility.
Yeah, it's a strange one with Pickford, because I undoubtedly see the qualities in this game, but I think the thing for me that's always unsettled me, of course, I'm a Liverpool fan, I might say anything, but it's the temperament for me that has always been the concern, in terms of just the likelihood to do something rash. And what's weird is that he seems to recover from it. So like when those errors do occur, he does seem to recover from it very well and not necessarily let it ruin like the remainder of that game, for example, which clearly speaks to the strength of his mentality. I think that the success he's had in his career and also with England actually clearly points to that. But I've always felt like I'd quite like my goalkeeper to be really, really boring, just completely boring, do the basics correct. Do you ever worry about that side of it? Or do you think that actually having a character like that within the squad has actually been a real benefit?
Hey guys, it's Eddie Gibbs from Anfield Index here. I hope you're enjoying this podcast and I'm sorry to call time on the show before it ends. In the current climate, it's tougher than ever before to offer podcasts for free. At Anfield Index, we produce over 75 free shows every month, which I'm confident is unparalleled in the LFC sphere. Whilst we'd love to offer everything for free, the production costs now make this impossible. That said, we don't want to follow the model of other channels and lock all of our content behind a paywall. So what we've decided to do is to continue offering every show for free, but cut that offering to 30 minutes on our longer shows. So to get all of our shows in full and enjoy the best of everything we have to offer, we really hope you'll consider supporting the channel and signing up at AnfieldIndexPro.com. For about the price of one cup of coffee, you'll get every podcast in full with zero ads. You'll also get access to our LFC VIP community, where you can enjoy live podcasts, engage with our podcasters, and chat with other Reds in real time. So that website again, AnfieldIndexPro.com. Join today.
Sports Social Podcast Network.